The following show contains language which may be construed as strong or controversial and is intended for mature audiences only. It is sugar-reduced, salt-free, and seats a family of four in complete comfort. Please turn your speakers up and your telephone off and enjoy.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
And welcome to the Chick-fil-A version of the Gospel Revolution. Tonight we've got the Kenyan Corner, we've got Mike, we've got a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But I hope that you stay with us to the end. So settle in, buckle up, and enjoy the ride. This is the Gospel Revolution with Mike Williams Ministries and Mike Williams. I'm your host, Beres Bartlett.
I'm breaking out of the mold, through the cracking of my skin.
Mike, this week's question from Moses Garter, the founder and president of the School of the Scriptures in Kenya. is in, and he says, "We've been taught that speaking in tongues is a requirement for Christianity, that when you're on a crossroad, just speak in tongues and you'll get an instant direction of what to do. Is this really true? That speaking in tongues builds and strengthens one's faith, according to Jude 20? How does speaking in tongues build up one's faith? What is meant by tongues of men and tongues of angels? What did Paul mean when he said, I speak in tongues more than you all? In general, what is the place of speaking in tongues to the life of a believer today, Mike?
Danged if I know. I think at the very first of these things, Barris, I think everybody has to drop the absolute persuasion that they know what they're talking about in any of this. It is just, number one, it's not that big of a topic in the New Testament. And just as in Moses' question, Jude doesn't say that it builds up your faith. He says building up yourselves on your most holy faith. So the issues, so there's just so many variations of what we even conceive that these verses even say. I definitely had the experience of speaking in tongues. It still is a part of my life if I occasionally choose to do so. I don't know that it does anything. I don't know that it doesn't do anything. I acknowledge all that is written about it by Paul. But speaking in tongues is not a gospel issue. Whoa, I just heard the hair singe off of a Pentecostal bun right then. Speaking in tongues is not a gospel issue. The gospel is a revelation of who we are. It doesn't have anything to do with what we do, including speaking in tongues or praying or worshiping or any of these delightful, wonderful subjects. There's nothing about healing. The gospel is not the good news about healing. And the gospel is good news to us that brings to us the saving of the soul. So this is for our minds. Now, if somebody were to ask me, Mike, we want you to get up and speak or teach on speaking in tongues and the baptism in the Holy Ghost. Now, I used to do it. But I'm telling you, I have to say, as I said right up front, I just don't have a clue what this is all about. I think that there's way too much of brouhaha about it on both sides. I mean, you've got the Baptists saying that it's of the devil to speak in tongues. And then you've got the Pentecostals who say it's a wonderful addition to the person who has been, quote, born again. And then you've got the Pentecostals who say if you ain't speaking in tongues, you ain't going to heaven. So there's a lot out there about it. It's obvious the New Testament speaks about it. It talks about the prophecy, the tongues and interpretation. And all of those things, I pastored a church where we did all of those things. And I can tell you, it's just weird. I just tell you, it was weird. It was just weird. I remember, I got to tell a story. It was in the church I was pastoring in last. And I won't tell the story behind it because it does get lengthy. But we had this lady in our church. She was a bit of even what we would have called a legalist even in those days that we would have said she was a legalist. And was given to speaking in tongues and also interpretation of tongues. So she stood up and she spoke in tongues. And then there was this long pause because nobody liked the lady. She was just just like a sour pickle, you know. And so she's up speaking in tongues, and it's like everybody's going, oh, God, here we go again. So, you know, so this is going on. And so she started to prophesy then, and it was a prophecy of judgment. Now, it was in this church that I first spoke of the gospel of peace. So she was definitely not happy about my declaration of the gospel of peace. And So this had been about probably a year before that I'd first taught the gospel of peace. And here we were in our new church building now. And she stands up and she speaks in tongues and waits. And of course, you have to wait for the interpretation, you know, now how, and you usually somebody just gets tired of waiting and somebody does or says something, you know. So she got tired of waiting. So she began to interpret her own tongues. And it was a prophecy of judgment. And I don't remember exactly what it was now, but it was a prophecy of judgment. The worship and praise team was up, you know, and, you know, you have to have three fast songs, three slow songs, and then a prophecy. So a prophecy can't come in the middle of a fast song or in between the fast songs. It's got to come after the slow songs start. So anyway, I, of course, I'm sitting on the front row with the congregation engaging with this. We had a great band, traveled all over many other states and for worship services, I suppose you would say. And so I'm just enjoying it. And then comes out this prophecy. So I get up and walk up to one of the freestanding microphones. And I just simply say, after this prophecy came out, I say, let's just go back to worshiping the Lord because that was not the Lord. All right. Then I sat down while the lady stands up who just spoke in tongues and prophesied, and she blurts out, was to me, saith the Lord. So you know, I've got these stories could last all day long. I just don't see where. Now, I've experienced all of this. You got to understand. I remember standing in John Osteen's church and hearing Dodi Osteen speak in tongues for the very first time. And it was the funniest sounding thing I ever heard in my life. She's a dear, sweet lady, but I'm telling you, it was like, I can't even tell you. I would have to imitate it.
Go on, imitate.
I have remembered this for years, but here's Dodi Osteen stands up and she takes the mic, and Dodie's not known for being up front at all. And so she takes the mic. So there's a hush that falls over the large congregation. And so Dodi begins that she takes the mic and begins to speak in tongues. And honestly, I remember it to this day. And she started speaking in tongues and it was, ooh, pooty, baboo, coo, boo, poo, badoo, poo, poo, badoo, coo, kaboo, poo. And I was just, everybody looked at each other like, oh my God. And then somebody quickly interpreted Dodi's tongues. And I'll guarantee you, everybody remembers the tongues. Nobody remembers the interpretation at all. So there's just, as I said, I can go on with these stories ad nauseum, but that was what I was into. That was the brand of evangelical Christianity I was in. Can I tell you that I had wonderful experience speaking in tongues? Yes. But you see, the gospel is not based on an experience that we have. It's an experience that Jesus had. And that is why that speaking in tongues is just not a gospel issue. And any time that there is a focusing in on any one of these topics, whether it's water baptism, speaking in tongues, communion, to where that this is the thing that defines this church, you can be pretty well guaranteed there's just no gospel that is there. Because these things aren't the gospel in and of themselves. Whether you receive communion, don't receive communion, speak in tongues, don't speak in tongues, whether or not you're water baptized, sprinkled as an adult at birth, all these things, they are completely irrelevant issues to the gospel. Completely.
So we're still faced with this verse in Jude that says that speaking in tongues does something positive for us. And then over in the other hand, I'm hearing in my mind, the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. It seems to me that the gospel has a power that we know about because it saves or wholes our soul, makes whole our souls, our minds, our us. Whereas speaking in tongues, we really can't say what that does. Have I understood you right there, Mike?
Yes. The indication is that it does something for us as far as the mind is concerned. Now, here's the other thing is that to validate this subject, though, the people who teach it literally pull every verse together they can and make it say what they say. Just like Jude, once again, it doesn't say that you build up your faith. It says that you are building up yourselves on your most holy faith. And it doesn't say praying in tongues. It says praying in the Holy Ghost. Now, does that mean praying in tongues? I don't know whether that means praying in tongues or not. But because that is the only bona fide spiritual prayer that Pentecostals ever acknowledge, then of course that does obviously automatically in Jude mean praying in tongues. However, it does not say that. So if you just took the time to go through these things to see what it said, what it didn't say, that would be a very powerful thing to do. I would never try to attempt to validate or invalidate the this issue of praying in tongues at all. The one thing that I would always speak up about is if someone is trying to say that this experience somehow is validation of the spiritual condition that we have before God, or that by not having it, that it reduces you in the eyes of God somehow. Because that Jesus, I can teach on all day long.
Because Jesus is the only validation we need, isn't he?
Absolutely. And that validation was 2,000 years ago. It's complete. It has nothing to do with an experience that we have on this earth right now.
Now, you want to comment on Moses' question when he says, what did Paul mean when he said, I speak in tongues more than you all?
I guess it means he did it more than everybody.
Whatever that was.
Whatever that was. I don't know if he was being facetious. I don't have a reason to think that he was. But I think what Paul was saying was how ridiculous it was of them to place such emphasis on speaking in tongues by saying, I do this more than all of you do. It wasn't saying, and you need to do it too. What he is saying in this is that they were making such a brouhaha about all of it. He just said, okay, well, if it's that much of a deal, I speak in tongues more than all of you do. So there. To say that it was to say that those verses bring us understanding about the subject, I think is stretching it pretty far.
Moses, thanks so much for that question. You've really stirred it up here. And I know that Mike has one last message for you here.
Moses, we send our love. We are always looking forward to getting your questions. We also send our love to you. We know that your aunt passed away this past week. So we know that a lot of things are taking place. We'll be announcing some of the wonderful things that are taking place there at the School of Scriptures and with things that are going on. And we'll be letting everybody know that. Moses, you and your wife and your beautiful children, we love you. We love the people of Kenya. And just give our love to the students at the School of the Scriptures.
If you've grown up in a good Christian home, then most certainly you have limited yourself to chaperone dating until the age of 21. If you are truly saved, it is not until your 21st birthday that the thought of dating someone without adult supervision would even enter your mind. Meet Timmy. Timmy just turned 21 and is getting ready for his first unchaperoned date. As you can tell, he is very excited and very nervous. But don't fret, Timmy. I have some dating secrets that I know can help any Christian man. Dating tip number one, comb your hair. Most Christian women like men who shower on a regular basis and keep their hair nice and neat. Buy a good comb and keep it in your side pocket at all times for quick and easy access. Dating tip number two, spruce up. Oh no, Timmy, you can't just wear any regular cologne. Wear Christian cologne. The only Christian cologne available is Miracle for Men. If you do not have any Christian cologne, borrow some from your father or grandfather. All men of God have Miracle because it's heaven's scent. All Christian adults speak Christianese and will be impressed that you do too. Follow these dating tips for Christian men, and you are sure to find a life partner that is suitable, submissive, and steadfast.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family. Do a
gospel revolution.
Mike, the other story that's ratcheting up the charts with a golden bullet is this Chick-fil-A brouhaha, where the CEO of Chick-fil-A made a comment about homosexuality, and now people all around the planet are picking sides. But the CEO, Dan Cathy, said this, I think we're inviting God's judgment upon our nation when we shake our fist at him and say, we know better than you as to what constitutes a marriage. Now, to be fair to Mr. Cathy, he wasn't making a business statement or a media release or a press release or anything. He was simply answering a question that was put to him by a Christian organization. I think it was a magazine or a radio station or something of that nature. But it was enough to stir up quite a controversy, wasn't it?
Well, it definitely was and is and will be for some time, I think. This is kind of a test ground for something like this, I think. Although we've had certainly instances of discrimination against every group that there is on the face of the earth. But, you know, the interesting thing for me, Barris, and again, is this contradiction thing. Now, he says that we are inviting the judgment of God upon our country because of just the definition of marriage, which is talking about two gay people being together, two men or two women. Yet, the business Chick-fil-A prides itself that it does not discriminate against any of its employees or anyone eating at Chick-fil-A. Now wait. Oh, stop the presses here. All right, so by anyone entertaining the idea that marriage might be different or more inclusive than what we thought would bring the judgment of God, but serving them a chicken sandwich is okay? I mean, you know, hey, put up a sign, Mr. Cathy, listen, I do not want you to invite the judgment of God on your business. So put up a sign that says what you want it to say. Chick-fil-A, if you're gay, stay away. This should be the slogan. I mean, my gosh, they're going to invite the wrath of God. They're feeding gay people, for God's sake. And not only that, there's gay people back there fixing those Chick-fil-A sandwiches. Now, which they know that they would incur lawsuits if they did that. Isn't it amazing that he thinks that it's okay for him to obey the laws of the land about discrimination on the job site and in concerning some issues like this as far as his business is concerned, but somehow everybody else is going to be inviting the wrath of God because a law would change to say that it's that there's equality for gay people in this country, even as we changed the laws and said that there's equality for women and also equality for all races in this country. So the contradiction in Mr. Cathy's mind is just, as always, anybody that would shut their business down on Sunday thinking it is the Sabbath, number one, has a screw loose. That's just absurd. To think that Sunday is the Sabbath is the craziest thing. Even in his church, if they have any biblical knowledge whatsoever, any scriptural knowledge, anybody knows that Sunday is not the Sabbath. To even find out what the Sabbath is, my understanding is it was based on a moon calendar, not a sun calendar anyway, and the solar calendar that we're on. So, Mr. Cathy, I know that you are a sweet man. I saw your picture. You just look just like such a sweet man. But come on. You need to get with it. Based on your doctrine, I am telling you, you must stop serving gay people at Chick-fil-A. You must, if you're going to close on Sunday, why have you drawn this line that says they can work for you, you can serve them, but you can't open your doors on Sunday, and you cannot be a part of, not only a part of, but if the decision is made that we'd have marriage between two men or two women that we're inviting the judgment of God, what has happened to the dozen states or so that have gay marriage now? The judgment of God hadn't come down on them. And God forbid a tragedy happened there, because we know that Pat Robertson would come swimming out of the backwaters of the swamp of Christianity, pronouncing that the judgment of God was there because of gay people, just as he did with Hurricane Katrina. And even though the gay district in Louisiana, in New Orleans, was the only area that was not demolished by the hurricane, yet he says it was gay people who brought the hurricane into shore. They were standing there mooning people, I guess. I don't know what they were doing, but the gay people were bringing the judgment of God. And here was this hurricane moving through the ocean. Now get this picture. See, I got to play this out in my mind. Here it is. Here's a huge hurricane, a Category 5 out in the Gulf at the time. Thank God it didn't hit as a Category 5. So, did the hurricane get scared of the gay people before it got there? I mean, it was Category 5. It could have wiped them all out, but it got nervous or something, you know, and it dropped to a Category 3. It could have taken them all out. So was this an act of mercy or was it an act of wrath? You see, you get to the point to where that you don't really know for sure when you start looking at the picture in its entirety. So what was happening? So gay people were doing something, and this hurricane was churning through the water saying, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. Look out. Look out. I'm coming. I'm after the gay people. And all you Christians, I'm really sorry you're in the way. All you praying people, I'm just too big to avoid you also. So to get at the gay people, though, we all know it's worth a sacrifice to get to the gay people, to kill half the other part of the population. We have to destroy your property too, but my, we actually missed the gay district.
Now, I see the Jim Henson Company, the company that owns the Muppets, they have pulled all of their support. I think they were selling toys or something through Chick-fil-A,
yes.
And they said, enough's enough, we're not going to do it. And I also noticed Rick Santorum came out and said, good on you, Mr. Cathy. This thing is, talk about taking sides. Oh, and I read during the week that the biggest name in Christianity has come out in favor of Mr. Cathy and Chick-fil-A. And I thought, that's wonderful, Jesus has a word in here. And then I found out that Jesus isn't the biggest name in Christianity, apparently it was Billy Graham.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, goodness, in any case of discrimination, it doesn't make any difference who it is to me. I champion anyone who stands up against discrimination. So let's hear it for Kermit the Frog, you know. He knows when the pot is boiling too hot and to jump out. And Kermit jumped out of this situation. And Miss Piggy didn't want anything to do with Chick-fil-A. goodness gracious. And the grouch, he just decided that this is not for him either. So, you know, maybe we need to turn to Miss Piggy to find wisdom in this situation.
I don't think that's very good, Mike. I mean, here is a chicken doing things with a pig. Okay.
Nothing kosher about this at all.
Chick-fil-A, you were doing so well yesterday. Now those gays, they're gonna make you pay for those things you went and had to say. Suddenly you have all this free publicity, but those Muppets still pulled out, you see, 'cause they think that your history. Billy Graham's there with a prayer, but wouldn't say. Something strong, and now you long for yesterday. Suddenly, Chick-fil-A, you need consistency to be credible to folks like me. It's gospel revolution's plea. Gospel revolution's plea.
When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Well, pick my peas.
Mike, this week we also heard from Mark Eaton, who said, I was taught in the series on Blood Covenant by E.W. Kenyon that I could choose the blessings of Abraham or the curse of the law. The second that I boasted that I choose the blessings, then the law revealed that I could not be blessed without the finished work of Calvary. Interesting thought, Mike.
Well, the choose what you want. You can say you choose the blessing of Abraham or say you choose the curse of the law. It's not going to change anything either way. This was all accomplished, whether it was the curse of the law being dealt with or the blessing of Abraham. It was all wrapped up in the cross. This has nothing to do with the choice made on our part. If I stand out and yell out loud, I choose the curse of the law, I choose the curse of the law, it isn't going to do anything. And I know if we had any avid Christian listeners at the time, they went running for cover. But the fact of it is, I can stand and shout, I choose the curse of the law all day long. It's not going to do anything. And I can stand and shout all day long, I choose the blessing of Abraham. It isn't going to do anything because these are resolved issues. These are 2,000-year-old resolved issues. What do they mean? Well, that's a good topic maybe for another time. But the fact of it is, just to stick with Mark's question or his statements here, it's just the fact that this is just not a choice that people make today. It's just not a valid thing to put before people.
Is this sort of like a Frenchman standing in the middle of the Champs-Élysées and saying, I'm German. It doesn't make any difference anyway. He's still French.
It doesn't make any difference. Yeah. It's not going to change a thing.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. And, you know, we have diminished the work of the cross by placing all of these decisions on our part. Well, it's deciding to speak in tongues, deciding to have communion, deciding to choose the blessing of Abraham or deciding to choose to make Jesus our personal Lord and Savior, which is one that blows me away the most. We have done all of these things. We've got to understand These are not things that lead you to understand the work of the cross. These are things that take you away from understanding the work of the cross. And these are external forms of spirituality, even if they're nice things or good things or even beneficial things. They're not beneficial for redemption. None of them are beneficial for taking away the curse of the law. None of them are beneficial for adding the blessing. That was all done at the cross.
It is finished?
I think that's what it says by Job.
Okay, here's an email from Katie, who writes, "Can I hear God speak to me today? Does he care at all about what I choose to do with my life? I thought I heard you say something like that was back in the Old Testament, but I wonder about Paul. God obviously intervened in his life and spoke to him in a dramatic way, and this was after the cross, wasn't it? Would you kindly comment on this, Mike? Thanks so much. Really do appreciate everything you do. Katie Griffin."
Thanks, Katie. Yes, I am pretty blusterous about these things, aren't I? Number one, never would I ever say that God does not care about anything. I mean, God has shown his care for us through the cross. And but this is not a daily issue. The issue of whether God cares or doesn't care is not a daily issue, and it's not a daily choice on our part to invoke the caring of God or the I don't caring of God. These are not issues that are ours to make choices in that was going to cause this to be come up as somehow different in our life, to the positive or the negative, or if you will, the blessing or the curse. Hearing the voice of God, I am definitely, I hedge away from that, sweetheart. I hedge away from that just as much as I can. I have seen so much abuse of people hearing from God. Now, if Jesus shows up and appears like he did to Paul, I'm going to pay attention. There won't be any arguments from me about the subject. But I think that's way different. I think to compare the two, of me trying to decide who to marry, who not to marry, whether to not to invest or not to invest, whether to turn right at Oak Street or not. See how we have extrapolated that down from an absolute appearance of Jesus himself in this man's life for an absolute specific purpose of establishing the gospel. And so, yes, I do embrace that. It is in the book of Acts. And if anybody's listened to me very much, I just don't put any credence in extrapolating doctrine out of the book of Acts. And I'm trying to think. I honestly don't think that Paul ever made reference to that in his writings. I honestly don't know whether he ever brought it up. I don't think he ever brought up the issue of this term in the book of Acts. But like I say, this is not where we determine doctrine pertaining to the gospel at all, whether it's in Acts, whether this happened in Paul's life or didn't happen. It's irrelevant as pertaining to the gospel. So the issue of the gospel now is that we are empowered to choose. And we are empowered to know our identity through the power of the work of the cross and the revelation of that took place 2,000 years ago.
Seemed to me back in the day that it was, everyone was hearing from God and everyone was hearing something different at the same time, Mike. The classic story I remember hearing from so many different directions was the predatory male on the hunt for a wife saying to a girl, "God told me you'd marry me."
Mm-hmm.
And the girl saying back, "Well, when he tells me that, I'll think about it."
And thank God the girl would have sense enough to do it, because there was a lot of girls who just said, "Well, if God said so, I guess I got to do it."
Boy, how tragic! But I remembered that back then the conversation stopper would always be "The Lord told me." You can't take that anywhere. If the Lord told you, am I going to be fool enough to try and go against the Lord? So it seems to me that a lot of people did a lot of things in the name of the Lord that the Lord probably didn't know about.
Well, and it continues to this day, and to every varying degree, things that actually turn out good. It's not that everything that somebody says the Lord told them to do always turns out bad. lot of those things do turn out good, but a lot of them turn out just as equally as bad, but no greater. The people who say that God spoke to them don't have a greater degree of success than those who have not heard from God. Those who do not hear from God do not have a greater degree of failure than those who, quote, do hear from God. So it's all just hyperbole. It really is superficial at best. I have not needed to hear God speak to me in many years, and things have really gone quite well. I've made mistakes. I've made good decisions, bad decisions, all over the map. But the thing of it is that you, when you invoke the name of God into your decisions, and then things do not turn out the way that you presumed that was for God's purpose, you're left with a whole heap of mind-boggling things to work through. And I think the only thing that can cut through that muddle is the gospel, because it brings everything back to ground zero, brings it all back to one, and eliminates all the confusion. I remember being in the church here and in Houston several years ago, and one of the young girls stood up and was talking about how God spoke to her. And she made the open declaration that, and here's the thing, is it just boggled my mind that not only nobody else said anything, but I didn't either. But she stood up and she said that God spoke to her, and she'd been trained by the pastor as to how to hear God's voice. And as were the others in the group, I came along later, and the church is no longer in existence. So, but anyway, she stood up and she said, God spoke to me. She was just so delighted and just thrilled. And she said, God spoke to me and told me that he has done many more things for me, much greater than the cross, in my life. And the pastor just stood there and said, yeah, praise the Lord. Praise the Lord. Everything in me is going off, and nobody, and everybody's just sitting there like, yeah, okay, but you're right. It is an end of all conversations. I mean, am I to debate the, so if I speak up, am I debating with God, or am I telling her she's crazy?
Yeah.
Because it's one of the two.
Yeah.
Nobody said anything. I did speak with the pastor about it afterwards, and it was just this Melba Toast response of, well, it's just what she saw, and what God says to her is not what God would say to somebody else. But when you're saying that God has done many more things for you, much greater than the cross, I'm sorry, we're down to the nuts and bolts of things. So I'm not impressed. I get a little nauseous if somebody says God said, or God spoke to me, or God told me anything. Just follow your heart. Is that God talking to you? I don't know. I just know that the power of this life is found in the ability to live out of our heart, not by getting divine instructions from an external source.
Follow your heart.
Follow your heart. This is a practice. Following your heart really is a practice. And it's not so that you'll eventually get it all right. It's so that you will trust that regardless as to whether following your heart causes you to experience more difficulty or less difficulty in life, you begin to trust that regardless, by following your heart, you begin to know that even if you fall into a ditch following your heart can lead you out. There just isn't an end to following your heart. There's not a wall. There's not a barrier. There's not an end of the road, because no matter what happens, you can still follow your heart.
So thanks, everyone, for your emails and your questions. Please keep those questions coming in, because
questions are the lifeblood of the gospel revolution.
An incredible reversal has taken place from humans trying to place faith in God so that he can be what he is. And instead, God has placed his faith in us so we can be who we are. He believes in us, therefore it empowers us. We in the past have been trying to empower God with our faith, and God has decided to empower us with his faith.
Gospel Revolution.
Welcome back again to News of the World. That's a segment where we look at the news that leaves your mind in a whirl. And we start today with a story out of Orlando, Florida. The news down there has it that the way you discipline children is to put them in the trunk.
Services were in full swing at the Church of the Nazarene Sunday when the people across the street having a garage sale heard screams from the parking lot. They told Orlando police they saw this man, 50-year-old Johnny Wynn, carrying a 5-year-old girl towards his trunk, throw her inside and close it for about a minute. The witness says she called 911 while her husband shouted for him to let her out. According to the arrest report, when police confronted Wynn, he asked, "What you want here? I didn't do anything. She was only in the trunk for a few minutes." At that time, it was 97 degrees outside.
Gosh, if only I'd have known, I could have saved myself so much trouble back in the day. Children are meant to be seen and not hurt. Heard. Here is a story from the Christian Institute at www.christian.org.uk that claims that a government advisor has labeled evangelical Christians as like totalitarian Muslims. There you go. I wonder what on earth could have possibly made him use the word lunatics. Well, anyway, it's the fastest growing sector of the church in the UK. 2 million evangelical Christians over there, the fastest growing part of the church. And they take their faith seriously, but that does not make them extremists, said one of them, commenting with a hammer in his hand. In 2004, the Home Secretary at the time, David Blunkett, he drew criticism when he equated evangelical Christians with Islamic terrorists. He was arguing that society needed protection from those people rather than make exceptions for them. Jack Sharp, pastor of Chicago area megachurch First Baptist Church of Hammond, has been fired from his position after confessing to having sex with a young girl in his congregation. Now, he didn't actually walk. He's been fired. But the funny thing is, see, you fire a pastor that is messing around with a young lady, but what you also do is you have to lie about it. See, the first time that they mentioned this at one of the services, he was put on indefinite medical leave. Now, in the fundamental culture to which Jack Sharp belongs, that is double talk for we're firing him. We're just making it, we're just giving ourselves time to make it look good all around. According to the Gallup poll, U.S. confidence in organized religion is at a low point. Well, it's at a low point. That is since, I think, the 80s sometime. In 73, the church or organized religion was the most highly rated institution. Not so high anymore, apparently. That's the Gallup poll. Now, here is a church in Mississippi who they refuse to marry a black couple. It's a Baptist church, so you know it's full of love and godliness. And not only did they refuse to marry them, but they said they apologized. Of course, they hadn't apologized, because why would you apologize about doing something that you thought was right in the first place? And the fella who was on television said, "Apologize? I'd like to hear any of them apologize. I've just had a couple of calls from a couple of people wanting their books back." Maybe if you didn't want black people to be married in your white church, you might just be religious. Westboro Baptist Church are up to their tricks again, but this time they backed off again, this time because they were confronted by zombies, apparently. Members of the controversial Westboro Baptist Church showed up to picket a Seattle area military base last week, but were confronted with an unusual counter-protest, dozens of people dressed as zombies, says the ABC News. Well, good for you, zombies. You just keep on picketing those Westboro Baptist people. Pennsylvania church pastor faces charges in a mock kidnap. Now, here is a follow-up to a story we brought you a couple of weeks ago. This pastor who arranged for the youth of his church to be kidnapped and had them traumatized when they were taken into his
his house blindfolded and saw, and then their blindfolds were removed and they saw him being beaten about the head in a friendly manner with a with an iron bar, and all of this as part of a plan to well train them up in how terrorism in the third world is. This happened at the Glad Tidings Assembly of God in Middleton, Pennsylvania, and one of the children's parents made a complaint to the police, and the police have sure enough gone ahead and charged the pastor with kidnapping. Here in Patheos.com, Russian Orthodox Church activists in the city of Saratov are calling for Facebook to be banned in Russia for perpetuating gay propaganda and flirting with sodomites, according to a post on Mashable. The group gave Facebook's Russian officers a 24-hour ultimatum to remove all content promoting homosexuality, or they would sue internet service providers who allow access to Facebook. You know, maybe if you want to sue businesses because of a third party's sexual preferences, then maybe you're religious? Yeah. Here we have a story on the Huffington Post in their religious section. And it's about Snoop Dogg. He has converted, you know, to being a Rastafarian. Now, the only thing is that Snoop Dogg, who scored a huge hit with a hip-hop anthem called What's My Name back in 93, in announcing his conversion to Rastafarianism on Monday, July 30, he unveiled a new answer to that lyrical question. He said, "I want to bury Snoop Dogg and become Snoop Lion." Why? Because in Rastafarianism, dog is a put-down. And he can't call himself a dog no more. Religion. Here is a story where in Texas, just the other night, Texas executed a man with an IQ of 60. Now, an average IQ is considered by most psychoanalysts to be around about 100 points. This man had 60, very close to half of that. Now, in legal terms, Texas considers anybody with a mental IQ of less than 70 to be mentally retarded. That's their legal standing, which might tell you something about Texas. I don't know. Nevertheless, in Texas, if you are mentally retarded, you might be going to the death chair. It doesn't matter if the evidence is not there. It doesn't matter if there's no forensic evidence, there are no eyewitnesses. If you're more interested in closing cases than you are in justice, you might be religious. Apparently, Jesus has tired of appearing in plates of spaghetti. He now appeared on a breakfast tortilla, a Texas man found, according to Channel 10 News. No record, apparently, of his IQ. Be careful here. He might end up in the gallows. This man is carefully tucked away in alfoil. He's not going to touch this. No, sir. He's going to keep it and maybe sell it for $1,000. He's probably looking for the trifecta, maybe this plus a cup of coffee plus something else. And there you go. Nothing like seeing Jesus in a breakfast burrito. The WCTU. Now, here is an interesting organization. The Women's Christian Temperance Union. I remember when I was a young fellow, I went to a fair in Melbourne at the Melbourne Show, actually. Well, when I call it a fair, it's actually a pretty huge show. And there was a temperance union. They had a little coffee house. And up on the wall was a big old sign. It was a big old poster. And it had all these mean, nasty pictures and a skeleton in the middle. And it said murder, child abuse, widows. And it laid out all of these things, which were just dreadful things, and it said at the bottom, alcohol, the mother of them all. Well, this same organization has now said that it plans to keep going until every state in these here United States are dry. This is the same organization that fought for prohibition in the early 1900s, and they're at it again. You might be religious. Think about it. America has released a report criticizing China for a lack of transparency in religious freedom. China has simply responded angrily and said, "Well, look at you. You've got more religion than any other country on the face of the earth. And what's that done for you? Apparently, you've got more people in prison than both us and Russia put together," the Chinese have said. And that's true. I mean, there is nothing more to say, really. I mean, if you have more prisoners in prison
than any other country on the face of the earth, either numerically or statistically by percentage of population, and you claim yourself to be religious, well, maybe, oh, I don't know, isn't there an old saying about the pot calling the kettle something or other? Here's a chaplain who had to quit the Southern Baptist because he went to, not because he officiated at, but because he went to a marriage between two homosexuals. Yes, sir. They said we can't approve of anyone even going to one of these kind of funerals. Well, it was his funeral, wasn't it? We can't even abide people going to a wedding where there is a marriage between two homosexuals. So they made it so difficult for him, he had to just simply pull the plug and leave. You know, you may be religious if you try to determine what parties and what kind of weddings people go to. You might just be religious. There was a story I had here on Todd Bentley. Todd Bentley's the young fellow that's covered in tattoos, and a few years ago he was commissioned by the Kansas City Prophetic Group. A number of them went and to Lakeland in Florida, where he was having some amazing miracles. Of course, unfortunately, not one person ever stepped forward to say that they'd actually been healed. But nevertheless, he claimed that there'd been at least 13 people raised from the dead. Not one of them apparently was around anymore to talk about it. Gajillions of people who were cured from all sorts of diseases. He was commissioned by these Kansas City Prophetic Group people, and they all had a word. I've got the movies, actually. It makes some pretty interesting watching. And unfortunately, what they were prophesying over him, that he would be doing great things in the name of the Lord, while he was doing that, he was also playing bedroom games with his secretary. Now, he's gone through a period of some kind of restoration. During this period of restoration, he's divorced his wife, he has married his secretary, and together they now say, oh dear, that was a bad time. It was no question about it, it was wrong, but hey, we're having fun now and we're doing it legally. And guess what? We are back at it now in the UK, where we are stamping people in the face, smacking people in the... He loves the idea of Smith Wigglesworth, who used to punch people to rid them of cancers. In fact, let me just see if I can find... This, I'll tell you, this Sultan of Smack was... Can you imagine being married by him? You may kick the bride. Well, this is Beres, and next week we'll be back with more impossible stories. Remember, every story in News of the World is a real story from a real news organization. We're not making this up. It would be impossible to make some of these things up. In fact, there's just plain no end to the ridiculous hypocrisy that you can find in your local newspaper when it comes to religion. See you this time next week.
What a sad, sad story.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
Paper dragon, so tall, swaying and shaking and full of nothing at all. Painted face, fearsome smile. You've been roaring so loud. Succeed. You need some life on which to feed. You tell the sheep they have a need, so they'll be mindlessly following and never questioning. 2,000 years of deceit, 'cause you've been scaring the world with your stature, clowning our day with your glue, and filling our minds with your poison, preaching your message of doom. Paper dragon.
Well, folks, it is that we must leave you. Next week, we'll be delving into Chapter 2 of Mike's new book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. So come back next week when we'll do the same thing, only better. And here for one last word from the founder and the president of the Gospel Revolution is Mike Williams.
Thanks, everybody, for joining in. It has been a blast. And if you think this was good, hang on to your seats. It will get better and better. We love you a lot. Thank you for loving us.
Paper dragon.
wondering, why did we ever give a voice to something that's extinct? 'Cause you've been scaring the world with your stature, clouding our day with your gloom, and filling our minds with your poison, preaching your message of doom. Paper dragon. Oh, paper dragon. Well, we are walking our mission aboard. We're pulling out our life support.